Welcome to Highway Walkers Media's first ever podcast. I'm Josiah.
Hello, I'm Daryl.
And we are sitting here in my apartment in St. Paul, Minnesota. Today is Friday, the 16th of September, and we have a showing tonight for our third movie, Less Traveled. But we're actually here to sort of talk a little bit about our first movie, which is called The Highway Walkers, and it's where we got our name for our media company.
Yeah, our first film was about hitchhiking. Before we get into that, real quick, I just want to plug a little bit more about the tour we're on. We're currently on a tour going from Canada to Louisiana, following it's called the Jefferson Highway, which was the focus of our third movie. So now we're going through back through the Midwest, doing screenings. You can find a schedule of our stops on our website, highwaywalkers.com, and feel free to check that out and stop in to say hi. There's my plug.
All right, enough of that crap.
So here, we're going to talk about, devote a couple episodes talking about hitchhiking. So like I said, our first film was, we hitchhiked from Iowa to Oregon, and a big point of it was to do it safely and to record the ways, that we were able to take control. What things could we do to ensure that we were going to get a safe ride? We're going to talk about some of those things, experiences.
Yeah, I think something interesting about saying that you're going to do this hitchhiking trip brought a lot of fears up for a lot of people. You know, myself included, but also like my family, when I'd talk to them about it, I'd say, hey, you know, we're going to take this trip, and it's going to involve me getting into cars with strangers, which is a scary concept for a lot of people, and was scary for me, too. I'm not, you know, excluding myself. But I think that right away kind of sets us up for, you know, the mood of the whole thing is that there's a general nervousness about hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm. And to speak to that a little bit, it was, I mean, in general, but we did this trip in 2011, and I don't know, maybe just because I've gotten older, but the thing we kept running into while we were hitchhiking was that people were saying, oh, the world's a completely different place now. I would never hitchhike today. I hitchhiked in the 70s.
Right.
I find myself kind of thinking, I'm glad we hitchhiked when we did in 2011, because 2016, man, I wouldn't want to hitchhike today. But is that just because I'm getting old?
Right.
What the heck?
Is that just the same?
Yeah.
You know, you're carrying the same biases with you.
Which is so, yeah, hypocritical of me to think. I need to, like, get rid of that.
That's funny. But, yeah, I guess I would think that. This is a little tangent, but have you picked up any hitchhikers since that trip in 2011?
Yes. I've picked up two people that I can think of offhand. One guy, it was, like, late. It was, you know, dusk. It was night. So I knew he wasn't going to get a ride, and he ended up being really nice, and I let him off at his house, and it was fine. The other guy was really creepy. He was wearing all denim, nothing against jean jackets, but it was weird, and he kept saying how beautiful I was, and he was too regretful to get out of the car, and it was pretty close to after we got done hitchhiking, and I was frustrated, because I was like, we just went to all this work, to made this movie. Did like, you know, have been talking about it, been getting some press about it to say like, hitchhiking's not as dangerous as you want, or as you think, but then here's this guy who made me feel really uncomfortable. So that was frustrating.
Have you? Yeah, I felt really empowered to do it, like right after we finished the trip.
Pick up a hitchhiker?
Yeah. And so then I was kind of like looking for it, which it took a really long time for me to find one because there just weren't any. I'd be like, oh, there's one. And then, you know, they'd be asking for money or something like that. But I was scoping it out. I finally found one almost a year after the trip. I was driving down to Arizona. And I was in southern Colorado. And I picked this guy up. And I drove him all the way down to Phoenix. So I spent like 6 hours in the car with him.
Wow.
It was a long ride. And, you know, he was obviously homeless and like a little smelly, and the conversation was definitely awkward, but he was, you know, very nice and pleasant, and you know, I never felt like in danger. Granted, you know, I'm a 30-year-old white male, so I can understand if that would change people's perspective. But I don't know. It was nice, and it was like, it was great. But then once we got to Phoenix, he was like, "Hey, you know, if you're leaving anytime soon, here's my phone number, and like, call me at this time." And because I, you know, I was just in a stopover for Phoenix, and so then I felt this sort of like obligation to like call him. And it, so I will say that the experience of hitchhiking was of picking him up was great, but then like, I kind of wanted to cut the strings right there. But he sort of was like, "Oh, you're a nice guy. Maybe I can get some more nice out of you."
Mm. Part of the appeal of hitchhiking, I thought, was that it was a finite amount of time. And when they were gone, they were, when you part ways, you part ways. That was what part of the cool part about it, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, being able to have a conversation with a complete stranger,
mm-hmm.
and not need to, like, trade phone numbers afterwards, or like, "Here's my email address."
Put up a ruse that you're going to be best friends.
Right. So, yeah, I agree. That was a nicer part of hitchhiking. And you just feel like they could brighten your day, you could brighten their day
mm-hmm.
a little bit. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. To just reiterate, I don't remember if we said this. So we Josiah and I hitchhiked in 2011 from Iowa to Oregon. We took 30 days to do it, which we could have done it much faster.
Yeah.
But we were making a documentary about it, and this was our first documentary. Like, we weren't, you know, we were not being paid at all to do this film. We had just met each other 5 months prior to making this trip. Do you want to talk about a little bit what spurred the us
sure.
being together to do this
yeah.
adventure?
I mean, we had both sort of dealt with these experiences in the past of, like, people saying, "Hey, let's do this thing." And you get really excited about it, and you, like, you know, are ready to go do the thing. And then that person says, "Oh, you were serious about that? Oh, I was just kidding." And, like, you know, to the point of where I remember you telling me that you, like, actually packed your bags and, like, met somebody in the cafeteria or something
yeah.
like that. And, like...
Yeah, and they didn't show up. And they're like, "Oh, I was just... I didn't know you were serious."
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
And that is so frustrating to have that happen. And given the fact that, like, yeah, I like talking about stuff. And there's a certain, you know, time frame where you're like, I know I'm not going to do this thing that I'm talking with this person about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this was great because it gave us an opportunity to just, like, block off some time and say, we're going to do this thing. And there was real, like, freedom in that to say, yeah, for the month of June, I'm busy. Yeah, I can't. I don't know exactly what we're going to do.
Right.
But I'm busy, you know? Like, I've got this thing that I'm going to go do. So, I think we sort of bonded over having those past experiences
mm-hmm.
of...
not following through.
Yeah.
Being around people who wouldn't follow through.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool just to have met you and be like, okay, for the month of June... You know, having an accountability partner to say,
yeah,
we have to stick to it and fill that month with whatever we decide to do.
Yeah. And so that sort of led to us planning on what to do. And hitchhiking is obviously very low planning, which I think appealed mm-hmm. to us. Like, it didn't require any sort of, like, talking with anyone. I mean, we did plan for it. We did buy some things for it and things like that. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then once we decided to make it a documentary, took on a little bit more planning aspect, but hitchhiking is very low commitment, which made it an ideal trip,
mm-hmm.
I think, for our first one.
Yeah, and we both kind of, I think, brought to the adventure side of it is, like, the desire to share it, because neither of us were filmmakers at the time, so when we, you know, made, you know, pretty large investments in these cameras, because neither one of us had much money,
yeah.
and, you know, bought these cameras and made a point to say, like, we're going to be able to share this adventure through the medium of film and, like, making a documentary about it. So we'd never hitchhiked before. We'd never made a documentary before. We had just met each other. We were in over our heads in a lot of ways, which I think was the beauty of it. Like, all those things
yeah.
combined, you know, were great ingredients for a, you know, good adventure.
Right. At the least, a really good adventure, a good experience. Because you can watch the films and the... the like web shorts that we put out, and they're, you know, they're not terrible, but they're not like anything I'd hang my hat on now as far as like quality filmmaking goes. But it still is, you know, sometimes you just have to get out there and try and fail and be happy with the result, you know, that you learn something along the way. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about, that's kind of a back history with us, why we hitchhiked. You know, people have all kinds of reasons to do it. Some people hitchhike out of necessity, which, you know, takes a lot of the fun out of it, I'm sure.
Right.
But I guess we're specifically talking to the culture of hitchhiking today, you know, in the year 2016. Right. Well, I mean, like we said, we did this 5 years ago, and I do think it is a little different today, and that's probably us being, you know, in our 30s or close to it, and and not being, you know, in our early 20s. But there are precautions that I think people can take that we took
right.
that ensure that we had a good trip, while at the same time acknowledging the fact we are both men, we're both white, and with those two very large, you know, contributing factors, we did what we could to make sure that we got good rides.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny, you know, like the culture of hitchhiking has changed to where people are like, I would never get in a car with a stranger. Mm-hmm. And yet, like, we have this thing where you use your phone to get in a car with a stranger, and it's called Uber, and it's,
right.
like, totally accepted. And yeah, I'm sure Uber vets their people, but, like...
Kind of. You know, it's
right.
It's not, like, well-regulated.
Yeah.
But it has this, like, thin veneer where people are willing... It's like getting on an elevator. People forget that you're standing on a box held up by cords. Like, we have this... I don't know.
Right.
We trick ourselves into thinking that it's actually a safe thing.
Right. So everyone thinks that Uber is safe.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and it probably isn't. I have nothing against Uber. But, like, it's essentially the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're getting into a car with somebody that you don't know, and they're going to take you there. It's just that this time there's a little money involved. Hitchhiking kind of eliminates the money.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. So, I do think that's, like, an interesting thing. We're living in a very... time where we're very afraid of hitchhiking, but we also like do this thing that's really close to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is funny. I hadn't thought about that because we addressed in the film the idea of rideshare, like hitchhiking in the 21st century. Yeah. We got online, we got onto rideshare.com, which I don't even know is a thing anymore. I'm pretty sure it is. But we, you know, found someone who gave us a ride from Salt Lake City to Denver to Salt Lake City.
Denver to Salt Lake City.
And we talked about that being like hitchhiking in the 21st century, but you're right that today that's just Uber.
Yeah.
You know, which is not, oh yeah, it definitely makes it feel like we're cheating now.
Yeah, but you like, you just pay them a little money and,
uh-huh.
and it works. Yeah.
Well, why don't we talk about, just like touch on some of like the...
Sure, brief, yeah, the basics.
Like, content before someone hits out, you know,
right.
Things that you can do. Like, let's just talk like physical appearance.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, like, the more clean cut you are, the more likely you are to be picked up. And I think that kind of, we always talk about, like, oh, don't judge a book by its cover. But I think you just judge a book by its cover a lot of mm-hmm. the times. And that's not always a bad thing. If somebody looks very scary, then people probably aren't going to stop.
Right. All you have is the cover. You know, you've
right.
got, I think they say you've got, like, 1 second. To, you know, and let's be real. I mean, you've got like 3 seconds to make a good impression on someone. And if someone has, you know, if someone's driving, they're not going to go out of their way to help someone who they think might endanger them.
Right.
So, yeah, so we both were clean shaven.
Right. We shaved our beards and got haircuts.
Uh-huh.
And tried to at least look presentable. I mean, we had these huge backpacks on, stuffed with every manner of thing.
But bright colored.
Yeah, but bright colored.
Avoiding camo and other stereotypes.
Yeah. And we also, another thing to, like, make us far more presentable was we had instruments, which was, I think, a very positive thing, because the positives were, like, twofold, because not only do you think, like, somebody playing a ukulele is probably not a terrible person, but also gave us something to do when we were waiting for rides, which mm-hmm. was really nice.
Yeah, it was a good... social lubricant and really diffused the situation, because I was playing the ukulele, you were playing a thin travel guitar. It looked like a dulcimer.
Yeah.
And like, just, you know, we both had bright colored hats on, bright colored backpacks, and like playing these tiny instruments. It really unloads the whole like dynamic of like, are you dangerous or not? Like, clearly not.
Well, and even to like back that up, just the fact that there were two of us going makes a huge difference in safety. I mean, like, there's safety in numbers. And I think that's a smart way to think about it. Is like, yeah, if you have a buddy that you can go with, you're far more likely to be safe than if it's just you on your own.
Right.
So.
And even to dumb it down even more, just having a good attitude and smiling.
Right.
Because there were a couple of times when we'd go 2 hours without getting a ride. And I remember seeing campers go by, like, they have so much room. Ugh, why don't they just stop? And then, like, you have to think, that's not going to help anybody.
Yeah.
They don't owe us anything.
Yeah.
No one has to stop.
Yeah, definitely, like, trying to keep the attitude positive was tough after the, like, third or fourth hour of nothing. Because you see all these cars passing, and you're just like, oh, come on, guys. Like, but I do think that keeping a positive attitude is, like, key to it. Because, you know, if you look like you're having a terrible time, no one's going to want to pick you up. Just to, like, bridge that gap over a little bit into the, like, psychology of it, like, I think a lot of people pick you up because they're looking for someone to talk to. So all of this is sort of to say, like, it helps to look like you're somebody would be pleasant to talk to. You know, some people pick you up out of the kindness of their hearts, and that's great. But I think a lot of people pick you up both for that and then for, like, just the desire to have somebody else in the car with them.
Right. That was the most fascinating part about the trip, is to understanding some of the psychology behind it all. There's so much that, you know, I don't think we can unpack even all today, but.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the most interesting tidbits was the idea of, and I think we'll talk about this more, but there are a lot of rules that you can follow to determine a safe ride. So we kind of touched on, like, really basics of how you appear to the outside world as a safe ride. And so there are things that drivers do that will trigger things to trigger it for you if you're hitchhiking, to say that's someone I'm comfortable getting in the car with. And one psychological thing is, if a car pulls right up to you, you're sitting on the road, the car pulls right up to you, what is that called? It's called mental chronometry.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's the amount of time that a person takes to make a decision. And so, like we said, you have, you know, 1 to 3 seconds to make a good impression on someone. And in those 1 to 3 seconds, that person makes all kinds of judgments about the situation, about you, about how far they're driving. And by the time they think, okay, I think it works out, I can pull over and pick this hitchhiker up, they've applied the brakes and they've come to a stop, but they've come to a stop farther past you.
Yeah.
Because they've taken all the time that they can to assess the situation. So that means that the car's past you, you have to run and catch up with the car to get in. If a car pulls right up to you, they didn't assess the situation enough or at all, and they were just looking for a body to get in the car, which is not a good indication for someone you want to get in a ride with.
Right. Anytime that you're referring to yourself as a body.
Right.
Kind of a terrifying implication.
Yeah. They need some body heat in that SUV.
Right.
So that's called mental chronometry, the amount of time it takes to make a decision.
Yeah.
And that came in really handy, because the cars that did pull right up to us, 1 or 2, I don't remember.
Yeah. We definitely turned down, I think, 2 rides.
And they did that.
And yeah, they did. They pulled up before us. Like, they just kind of drove up and weren't even past us by the time they pulled over. And yeah, it was a little creepy.
It was.
It
was amazing. Yeah, so that has a 100% success rate in vetting the potentially creepy rides. Because that was not the only factor. Like, they got out, we had conversations with them.
Sure.
And they, you know, didn't make eye contact with us. They were very shifty. They got out of their car.
Oh, right, yeah. Frankly, even the fact that they got out of the car, that's a big deal.
Yeah. But then pulling right up is a big red flag.
Yeah. Yeah, you touched on it, like, something else that you can do. They're going to be making the assessment of, like, how far am I going with this? So we always put the next big stop for us on a sign. And so mm-hmm. it gave people a way to determine, like, oh, am I going the correct way for this person? You know, like, I mean, it seems so stupid, but, like, the thumb isn't going to get you anywhere. It's got to be, like, a sign that will, that'll get you somewhere. Because if people just see a hitchhiker, they're like, oh, they're just going anywhere.
Uh-huh.
It helps to just have, like, a destination in mind. And that way, even if they're not going to take you the whole way, they'll be like, well, it's still on your route. And
right.
you can still... Yeah,
and it's one it's one way you can communicate with them too.
Right.
You know, our we got some good tips from someone who contacted us. They saw an article that ran about our story in the Des Moines Register before we left, and he called me up and he said that when he hitchhiked in the 60s and 70s, he had a big white laminated board like that he'd be able to fold up and stick in his backpack, and he would make the letters out of black electrical tape, so it was. Really, the contrast was really strong. People could read it from a long ways away. But he also put in a joke in where he's going. So, like, the one that we did that was my favorite was, like, boys to Boise. Or I can't think of any other ones.
I mean, it was just, like, Denver bound or something like that. Just a little something to make them hook onto it and smile.
Humor's a big diffuser. It really, yeah. It takes the charge out of the situation when people are potentially nervous. As soon as you make a joke or they see that, like, it's all just good fun, and, like, in the little ways that you can communicate with them before they even stop, it's just gonna help you out and help them out.
Right. And I think, really, it's all about, to get a ride, it's all about helping them out, helping them make the decision a little bit easier. But then, obviously, to keep you safe, it's about helping you out.
Mm-hmm.
I think all those things will attract the right people, which kind of hits both of those.
Yeah. So what, just to take a step back even further, what was your favorite part of our hitchhiking trip?
Oh, geez, my favorite part? I mean, like, there was a real sense of accomplishment once we finished that was something that I really enjoyed about the trip, is that, like, it really reduced traveling to kind of just the basics, like, get from point A to point B.
Mm.
And it sort of, like, focused. I felt like a sense of focus on the trip, even though, you know, all we were doing is traveling, but it was like, really, I've reduced my goals to, you know, like, getting some food every once in a while, but basically getting to a place. And there was something really freeing about that atmosphere that we had. And then, you know, it kind of didn't matter. Like, we tried to be safe, but it kind of didn't matter how you did it. You just, like, if we had to walk someplace, it was still leading us towards our goal. If we got a ride that was only, like, 5 miles, it still was, you know, getting us a little step further to our goal. So I loved that feeling, which is sort of hard to find, you know, in your everyday life, because we have, like, dozens of goals and it's never that mm-hmm. reduced. But, like, a favorite specific time, there's this great moment where we were feeling terrible. We had been up all night. We slept in this IHOP, and because we were in the middle of the city, and, you know, we had normally just camped this whole time before that, but, I mean, we had slept in this IHOP because we didn't have anywhere to go. And we got up and we hopped on a train, we hitched a ride on a train and got out of the city, and then we took a bus a little further, and the bus let us off in a spot that we weren't prepared for. We thought it was close to a campsite. There was no campsite. And so we're just walking in the middle of nowhere, and this car pulls up, and, you know, on the bus, we had sort of, you know, goofed off and, like, been smiling and making jokes with people, and, like, you know, whenever you're carrying this backpack that's, like, 50 to 70 pounds, people are, like, staring at you. And, you know, we got pretty used to the stares and just kind of started to make jokes about it.
And we're trying to charm people because we think that they might be our next ride,
right, too. It's a good habit to get into. It's just to, you know, be happy and be positive about it. But so we had gotten off of the bus and we were further on down this road. We'd been walking for, like, a mile and a half. And this car pulls up, and it is this, like, tiny old man who I don't know. He just was like, had all these wrinkles, but they were all like smile wrinkles. And we both recognized him from the bus. He had been this guy who actually hadn't like laughed or smiled at any single one of our jokes, but now he was smiling and came out and he had this like nice drawl about his voice. And
he talked at half the rate of a normal person.
Yeah, yeah, and he'd come out and I got home and I said, I've got to go rescue these two young men because they don't have the foggiest idea where they's headed. And it just is so like the moment of relief of like having somebody come help you out. But also the like, that was maybe the first moment in terms of filmmaking where I was like, we have to get this guy on camera. Mm-hmm. And I remember just like, you know, normally we'd been asking people to sign a release before we filmed them. And I think this was like a big turning point for us. Like we just filmed and then asked them to sign a release afterwards, mm-hmm. because we were both like, we've got to get this guy on camera because he's such a character. So like both in terms of like, he rescued us from a very dark moment,
mm-hmm.
and also like, he's like a highlight of the film. So
yeah,
that stands out as one of my favorite moments.
That moment is so good because, and I think this echoes something that you said earlier, but the idea that, so we've talked about this, like that experience being a big rite of passage for us. And I think about it being a rite of passage for me because like, we were out there on our own. We were relying on ourselves and our own wits. But that's such, there's a big contradiction to that because we were relying on other people too, you know? And so we weren't alone, and it would have had a totally different outcome if a complete stranger hadn't come to our rescue.
Right.
And that's kind of the weird juxtaposition of at least my experience with it, because I felt like leaving that experience, I felt more independent, but it's at a time when I was so dependent on other people. Yeah, it's fascinating. I love that memory. That was...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a moment where we completely needed somebody, and it was just so fortunate that it happened, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we were in the middle of nowhere, and we didn't know what we were going to do.
You talk about... In that section in the movie, you talk about kind of the idea of just going out there and putting yourself out there. And how scary that is to open yourself up to putting yourself in the situation where you're in the middle of Idaho walking down a dirt road and you don't know what's going to happen. And you know, your attitude towards humanity is either going to be terrible after that experience or it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And, you know, ours happened to be great, but like it could have easily, no one could have showed up and we could have been like, oh, people, man, they're the worst. They're right. Like everyone in 2011, you know, hitchhiking, the world's just a different place.
Right. Yeah.
And it wasn't the case.
Yeah. And it's really nice that it wasn't the case. But I think even like had that been the case, like had we had a negative experience with the whole thing, you know, it still would have been like a rite of passage. And it still would have like we would have learned a lot from putting ourselves out there in that position to fail, you know, to just try and go out there and be in the middle of nowhere and just try. Like, I think I definitely struggle with fears of, like, fears of failure and fears of, like, putting myself out there and, like, just being open and receptive to things. It's always hard to, like, oh, I don't want to put this out there until it's, like, super polished and super ready. And I don't want to go out there until I'm, like, super polished and super ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, even if, you know, it hadn't worked out for the best, which I'm very thankful that it did, I think stretching yourself in that way is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. That moment, though, stands out because it was a moment of, you know, complete need, which is a position that I don't like to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we put ourselves in very often. Mm-hmm. Which really, you know, honestly, the whole trip was a trip of complete need because you're constantly needing something from someone else.
Yeah. Do you think the world's a different place than... So people always compare hitchhiking with the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
You know, we can get more in the history of it. But do you think that the world is a different place than then?
I mean, yeah, of course. Like, you can't say that it's the same as it was then.
Mm-hmm. Are you more likely to be hurt hitchhiking today than back then, in your opinion?
I don't know. You know, I think we fixate on these... Oh, shoot. There's a phrase for it, and I'm not going to be able to remember it, but you could have the same experience 100 times, and a bad experience will happen on 101. Yeah. And then for the rest of the time, when you think about that, you'll remember the one bad experience. Mm-hmm. I think that's how our culture sort of approaches hitchhiking. Like, there are, you know, probably thousands of positive experiences, but then there's, like, 3 or 4 bad ones.
Well, that's how the world... I mean, that's how we're hardwired as humans.
Right. Like, I mean,
we are programmed to remember the negative because it's a survival instinct.
Right.
Which is kind of hilarious.
Right. It is. And it, you know, served us well at some point. But now it sort of, like, hinders you from doing things. I mean, yeah, in terms of... Has the world changed? Yes. Has hitchhiking changed? I don't think so.
If anything, it's changed for the better.
Right.
I mean, we talk about the rules that we made for hitchhiking safely. We could go back and revamp them and get rid of a bunch of them because, you know, we live in a world of, like, instant communication. And we had it safe because we were filming a documentary. We had people sign waivers. They knew we were out there. But even just, you know, a couple people out hitchhiking today... Bring your smartphone and, like, you can say, like, give a GPS tracker in it or take a picture of their license plate and say, like, hey, I'm just going to send this to my mom. Is that okay? And if they're not okay with it, then they're probably a terrible ride. Like, there are little things. Right. If anything, hitchhiking is much safer.
That's so funny. Yeah. Like, in the 60s and 70s, nobody had pocket communication.
Yeah.
You know? But now they do. That's so funny. Mm-hmm. But now it's less safe.
Right.
Which I guess implies, I mean, like, wouldn't you say that it implies that people think that the culture has changed, right?
The culture of information has changed. Mm-hmm. You know, the culture of news has changed, you know, because we're so, I think we are so programmed to fixate on the negative, you know, just because it makes us feel safer the more information that we have about our surroundings. But now we're getting, like, negative information about places outside of our immediate vicinity, which... You know, our brains are not evolved enough to deal with the problems happening across the world or even across the state or across the county.
Right.
Because we are still working on, like, tribalism biologically, but socially we're on a global scale. So, you know, electronics and technology has far past, like, evolved the human brain.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, there's a... I've said this to you before, but I love this, this, you know, idea is that our sphere of knowledge, like how much knowledge we can gain, has increased exponentially over the past couple of decades. Like, we can know about things happening across the world instantly, but our sphere of influence is still the exact same size. Like, I can only influence so many people. So I can learn about all these things, but can I go out and change... things outside of, like, my tiny little sphere of influence? Probably not.
And, you know, it's funny, this, your sphere of influence is, you know, like, so, like, we'll upload, like, maybe we'll upload this podcast. Yeah. And maybe, like, my mom, your mom, our wives, and maybe one other person will listen to it. And, like, our sphere of influence is still so, so small.
Yeah.
And, like, despite the fact that we have all these, like, are connected to all these people, it does across the world. It doesn't mean that they're listening to us.
Right.
Our influence hasn't changed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's hilarious.
It's a good thing to, it's humbling to remember that. Cause, like, I can be influenced by a lot of things, but I cannot influence as many things as I am influenced by.
It's comforting to know that the world is still small.
Yeah. At least, yeah. If you focus on your sphere,
yeah, that it's not overwhelming because, you know, you're not competing with the world realistically, you know, your sphere is still very small. Mine is, at least, not to speak for everybody.
Yeah. Well, so we've talked for about, you know, 35 minutes here. I think we're gonna wrap this up, but I do think we're gonna talk about hitchhiking again for our next podcast, so... Tune back in. We'll talk about a few more rules and maybe a few more experiences that we had.
Yeah, we can go much greater into detail. We just wanted to touch base. Before we sign off, have to do the commercial for Highway Walkers Media. That's who we are. I'm Daryl.
I'm Josiah.
Josiah. We are on Facebook, Highway Walkers Media, Twitter, Instagram. And not sure how we're going to upload these. Maybe iTunes, maybe SoundCloud. They'll at least be on one of our social outlets. So, yeah. So we figure that out.
If you did listen, thank you so much.
Yeah.
If not, well, I guess we don't care because you're outside of our sphere of influence.
Right. Anyone outside our sphere of influence, we don't care about you. But all of you listening, you're our best friend.
Yeah.
Well, take care. Thank you.
Yeah.